Well, hello everybody again. What I would like to do is continue slightly with this question of the houses. I thought I might be done, but I thought of one other way in which it would be interesting to consider them. So I'm going to make another document, basically, which tells us, we'll call this the okay, make it a little bigger. The relation between the planets and the houses. And this is three types of planetary rulers and their connection to the houses associated with the signs they rule. Okay. And relation between planets and houses. I'll put that down like so. All right. So it would be in this way would be how we would do it. Maybe I'll work in another color rather than red. The violet seems okay. And we'll do it this way. And house one, Mars, okay, Mercury, and Mars, Mercury, and Uranus. We see why we do this, I think, because house one is traditionally associated with Aries, and these are the three rulers of Aries. House two, Venus and Vulcan. I think we might also look at the sun because it's exalted, and we might look at the moon because it's exalted in house two. With house three, we have Mercury, Venus, and Earth, and there's no exaltation in Gemini. With house four, we have the moon, Neptune, and Jupiter. With house five, Jupiter is exalted in the sign Cancer associated with house four. See, how big should I make these? Maybe a little bigger, perhaps. House five, we have the sun, Neptune, comet, sun, Uranus, and there is no planet exalted in Leo. House six, we have good thing you can get those back, huh? We have Mercury, Moon, and this is Moon Neptune, and Moon, I should have started with Moon Vulcan, right? Moon Vulcan. Moon Neptune and Jupiter, and again Mercury for the exalted planet. With house seven associated with Libra, we have Venus, we have Uranus, Saturn, and Saturn, again, for the exalted planet. With house eight, we have Mars, Pluto, Mercury, and Uranus as the exalted planet. See, my objective here is to see whether the qualities of the planets and their rays tell us anything about the kinds of activities that we will find in the house. Now, from another perspective, I could bracket this and say that since rays 1 and 7 come constellationally through Aries, we have all ray one planets and Uranus for the seventh ray. See what I've done there? Since through Taurus comes ray four, we will say we have Mercury and the Moon, representing the fourth ray. I guess the plot thickens here, doesn't it? For house three, since the second ray comes through the sign Gemini, we have Jupiter as the one who relates the second ray, and we have the Sun. The Sun is carrying the second ray. Maybe I should have put them in order somehow. It would be the Sun, Jupiter. Exoteric first, Jupiter. So when I say all ray one planets, maybe I should be more specific. I should say Pluto and Vulcan. Those would be the ones who are not listed, and Uranus for the seventh ray. I just want you to be able to follow what I'm doing here. I'm looking for the various energy associations connected with the houses and how they might possibly indicate. We've been through what the houses indicate both in the simplest way, exoterically and esoterically, the lower and higher correspondences of the houses. Now, when it comes to house four, the third ray, ray three, Saturn, Earth, and ray seven, Uranus. Maybe that's the best way to do it, to put the rays which come through. So it's ray one, Pluto, Vulcan, and ray seven coming through Aries, thus related to house number one, through Uranus. Ray four, Mercury and the Moon. Ray two, the Sun and Jupiter. Ray three, Saturn, Earth. Ray seven, Uranus. With house number five, ray one is coming through Leo. That's house number five. So we have Vulcan, Pluto. Well, there are other ray one planets. Because, you know, we can go with the conventional rays, but we can also go with those rays which are implied as involved within the planet. Like, for instance, Uranus has a strong ray one on the monadic level. Mars seems to have ray one on some level. Maybe it's soul, maybe it's monad two. It is the school for destroyers. Probably there might be a ray five monad involved going to a ray one. That's possible for Mars. And then we have ray five, Venus. This is interesting. I had not thought of doing this before, but it came to me. Now, when it comes to Virgo, we have ray two coming through Virgo, and thus Sun, Jupiter. I'm just going to give the easy connections here with these planets and see if it connects with anything that is found within the house. And ray six, we have Mars and Neptune. All right, with house number seven, we have Libra, so it's ray three, so it is the Earth and Saturn. And there's also some Uranus in it, but Uranus is already mentioned. One of the rays of Uranus, maybe the third ray. Okay, we've gotten as far as house number eight. Sorry to have had to backtrack. And through house number eight, or through Scorpio, comes ray four only. So we have the Moon and Mercury. All right, now let's go back to what I'll do here is prepare the matter. One, two, three, four. And we'll make this house nine, house 10, house 11, and house 12. All right, so the rulers of Sagittarius are Jupiter, Earth, and Mars. And no planets exalted, NPE. What if I put that in general here? NPE for Leo and for Gemini. No planets exalted. And I'll put up here so we understand it. NPE equals no planet exalted. So 1, 2, 3, no planet exalted. 4 has it. 5, no planet exalted. 6 and 7 and 8. All right, no planet exalted. But through Sagittarius come, interestingly, Ray 4, so hence the Moon and Mercury. Ray 5, hence Venus, whatever else there might be. Ray 6, hence Mars and Neptune. So some undercurrent of circumstance or relationship related to those rays should also find its place in some of the major meanings of house number 9. See, instead of just looking at what the houses rule in a conventional sense and then spiraling them up, I'm looking for the contributions of the planets to that rulership. Yeah, okay, so I think you understand what I'm trying to do. House number 10, Saturn and Venus and Mars exalted. Mars exalted. Okay. And maybe that's the best way to put that there. Uranus exalted. Mercury is exalted in Virgo house 6. Interestingly enough, Jupiter exalted and Sun exalted and Moon exalted. So this is a way of creating a new causal network. Mars exalted, okay, for house 10. And then we look at the rays that comes from Capricorn. And those are Ray 1, hence Vulcan, Pluto, and others. It just depends on what level of planet you're talking about. Ray 3, so we have the Earth, Saturn, and if we want to be remote about it, we could bring in Uranus for Ray 3 and even Neptune to a certain extent with its trident, but let's not get too remote in the ramifications. Ray 7, Uranus. All right. With house number 11, the rulers are Uranus, Jupiter, Moon, Veiling, Vulcan, Neptune and Uranus again. And let's see here. Through Venus comes the fifth ray. So the fifth ray comes through Aquarius, hence the fifth house. So ray 5 comes in through Venus. There could be other planets. Some of my colleagues are working with the planet, undiscovered planet Sigma, and some of them feel it is the esoteric Saturn. All of that, I suppose, could be confirmed over time. And then finally, house 12. There's no planet exalted again, so let's put this here, no planet exalted. And house 12, ruled by at first Jupiter, Pluto and Neptune in a special manner, and Venus exalted. So, through Pisces comes Ray 2. So we have Sun and Jupiter, and Ray 6. So we have Mars and Neptune. Well, that's quite a network to deal with, assuming there's a causal relation. DK did suggest this. He talked about Leo, then he talked about the rays coming through Leo. He said Leo's very important now. Okay, it is. So therefore, rays 1 and 5 are very important now because they come constellationally through Leo. Of course, what is a constellationally associated ray, and what is a ray coming through one's planetary rulers, and the difference in the manner in which they affect mankind, let us say, is not easy to determine. I really haven't worked that out entirely. I mean, it may be that more Ray 1 comes through Aries than any other constellation at this time, and that if you're born in or under Aries, your will is strengthened, no matter what your Ray may be. We do see then a causal relationship between the constellational Ray 1 and the strengthening of the will under Aries, because Ray 1 does not arrive through the planetary rulers, which are Mars, Ray 6, usually, although Ray 1's involved, Mercury, Ray 4, and Uranus, Ray 7, although Ray 1 is remotely involved. So it seems that there's enough Ray 1 coming through Aries constellationally to make a difference in the life of man. But in terms of the actual area of focus of a constellational ray, as opposed to the area of focus of a planetary ray, I'd say that is an area of uncertainty. There's no cut and dried way to focus that difference. It's pretty clear that the zodiacal constellations can affect the monad, can affect the soul, can affect the personality, and even the subdiaphragmatic aspects of the personality. Those astrological factors can affect the whole range within the human energy system. Now, you know, I just conceived of this as something interesting to do, and I'm going to try to follow it through, if I possibly can. If my number locks don't confound me. So this is the, you know, traditional area that we're talking about, and I'm going to just list some of the things that we come up with as we're looking at the rulers one way or another of House 1. So what can we find listed here? And I'm going to make a little bit of a numbered area, and I'll try to bring it back here so that it works properly. All right. I know there's a better way to do this. But anyway, the physical body connected with Mars. The personality with Mars. I'll try to give the reason, so to speak. The planetary associate here. Great activity associated Mars and Mercury and Uranus, all very active, all inducing activity. And let's see, with Mercury, we have Mercury, the mental body, lower or higher. Uranus, well, let's see, I think I'll do it this way so that the attribution comes afterwards, right? Mental body, lower, higher, so that's Mercury. And also the senses and their acuity relate to Mars. Can it be that we have that? What did DK tell us about this first house? I'm trying to remember this. It was interesting. Okay. So this is the way he put it together here. He said, I might again point out that Mars is the transmitter of six-ray force, and it is this which makes the first house of action in the physical body that of the devotee who fights for what he desires or for that to which he aspires. The warrior devoted to a cause comes into being upon the field of action, the earth, which is in itself an expression of the third ray of intelligent activity. So Aries, the first house, and Mars and the earth initiate conflict focused in a form. This is the combinatory manner in which DK speaks. He manages to bring all of these factors into the discussion of the first house. So I'm wondering whether it might not be a good idea to, he talks about, you know, the warrior, the fighter, the one who fights for desires, fighting for desires upon the field of activity. And he calls this Mars. So there would be ways in which we could look at the rays of the planets as usually considered in relation to the house. It's getting a little complicated, isn't it? All right, it's starting to ramify just a little bit, isn't it? And the sun, ray 2. And pretty soon I think we're going to find that all the rays are in all the houses, though not to the same extent. And the mental body here, it relates to Mercury. The first house relates to the mental body because, in a way, the first house can be the mind, not just the physical body. Second house, the desire body. Third house, the etheric body. Or it can be reversed. I don't think we can relate the first house to the etheric body per se, but we can relate the second house to the desire body and the third house to the mind. I'll just come up with a few things. Unique identity in being, and that is Uranus. We're also told that the first house has to do with the causal body. And from that perspective, the sun is a perfect ruler of the causal body. And any level of identity, even the monad, and that would be the sun, that which rises in the east. And the sacrificial descent into form, let form again be sought, this is the sun as ray 2, unless a kernel of wheat falleth into the ground, falleth into the earth, and bring forth fruit, what is its value? So the idea of sacrifice is here. Now, when we get to the rays, you can get complicated here, right? But I'm just trying to get the method going a little bit here. When it comes to Pluto, we have the scaling away or the peeling away of false identities until we come up with the root identity. And I think I should have put Pluto at the end. That's the way I'm doing it. Okay. Pluto. And I hope I don't have to do it the way DK did it and just make a couple of suggestions. I suppose you can elaborate on what I'm doing here. When it comes to Vulcan, this is pushing oneself forward against all obstacles. and that is Vulcan, and it's a house essential will. That is Vulcan, and Uranus again is unique pattern of identity, and I think I did already do that, but the Uranus is reinforced. So you get the idea of how this can be done. And of course, the head center, Uranus and Vulcan are both connected with the head center, and the sun in all its glory is in a way connected not only with the heart center, but as a star, it's connected with the effulgence at the top of the head. And so we would have a way of tracing the every planetary and ray contribution of the house to the normal kinds of things that the house means. I'm going to cancel that. So, you know, the physical body is Mars, and the physical appearance is that, and the brain and the head centers, Uranus is there, and Vulcan is there, and even Pluto is there, you see. The causal body is there. I'm not going to go over all the things I did before, but you can understand that you can connect the planets and the rays to these esoteric interpretations. For the moment, I'm not too much discriminating between esoteric and exoteric. When we get to the next house, let's see if I can, that's house number two, and yep, okay. Now maybe the best way to do this would be to make this purple. Try to keep it consistent. And here we are in the second house, and I will try to line up the numbers so they're just a little bit clearer. Well, with the second house, we have light, and it's Venus. We have intense light. It's Vulcan. We have the knowledge, accumulation, or knowledge and its accumulation. We have Venus. We have, in general, since the moon is exalted here, we have the physical instrument as a possession. And we have the moon, exalted moon. We have wisdom, the wisdom house, and it's Venus. When it comes to losses and gains, it seems we have the will of Vulcan involved. We have here everything that is tangibility. Tangibility is going to be related to, see if I get there, tangibility. Light. So this would probably come earlier. Tangibility and form. This is both the moon and Vulcan. Let's see here. Oh, yeah. We have the communication of wisdom. Well, let's call it the accumulation. Knowledge and its accumulation. Venus and Mercury. And Mercury is brought through as ray 4. We have desire. And the desire is related, in this case, to the moon, which rules the personality, and all of its sense of incompleteness. We have a struggle, ray 4. We have values, Venus, the planet of values, not so much because of its fifth ray nature, but because it is connected with the beautiful. Okay. And we have the glorification of the form. And that is the exalted moon, exalted. And, well, I think that would be, and Vulcan. And Vulcan. Okay, let's, it does seem to want to keep that capital there because of the period. All right. Gains, losses, that which is worth having. Okay. Prana, that is Vulcan. Okay. Because Vulcan, through the Agni Chaitans, has a particular connection with the etheric body. The mineral kingdom, all of those things, Vulcan. So, let's just say, prana. And that is Vulcan. Intense light, etheric strength, prana, that is Vulcan too. Well, I'll tell you what, I find myself in the same position as Master DK. I'm eager to get on with the show here, and one could work this out oneself. Actually, couldn't. Could one not? See, let's just do one more for fun. We'll look at messages and short trips, things of that nature, very concrete. Messages, communications, and that is Mercury, the ordinary ruler. We will look at the higher mind affecting the lower, and that is Venus. We'll look at communication with the solar angel, and that is going to be a Venus again. How the hierarchical ruler might work here. Well, let's look at the interconnected nervous system. A few things that are pretty obvious. Interconnected nervous system. That's all related to Mercury, particularly. Yeah, the illumination of the second house. I seem to be coming back to that light. Illumination is also Venus, but we're going to find that here as well in the third house. The soul-infused mind. Soul-infused mind, and that's going to be both Venus and the Sun. We're going to the understanding of connections. That's going to be Jupiter, even though normally Jupiter in relation to Gemini is somewhat in a stressed condition. It's overextended, we might say. But I think as well, pure reason can come in here because there is a Mercury and Jupiter connection. So there is a Buddhic connection here as well. Because Gemini transmits the higher to the lower ethers. Let's just say communication between the higher and lower ethers. We have Mercury and Jupiter again. When it comes to the making the field of communication sacred, in other words, we're contributing the we're talking here about the angels to the earth, and we must involve the earth here as well as Venus. Let's see what other factors came into play here. Etheric body, mental transference of energy. Yes, the Rainbow Bridge. Okay, well, with the Rainbow Bridge, The Antikorana is both Mercury and Venus, and Jupiter for Buddhic connection. Jupiter is one of the Buddhic intuitive planets. So this can be the house of the concrete mind, yes. But the house of the concrete mind illumined. And that's Mercury, Venus, and Jupiter again. All right, and the general Ray 2 quality is we can call it this way, the mind that is in Christ. It has to do with loving mind, so especially Venus and the Sun, and also benevolent Jupiter. Well, again, a book could be written on this subject. I've generated so many connections here that if I was really going to go through them, I would have to stop my progress through the book, per se. I'm tempted. But it would take at least another two programs to do this correctly. So I'm tempted, well, not tempted, but I'm feeling that I should now leave this to you. And if I do get a chance to come back and expand, see that Jupiter in the third house, this is expanding the sense of the connections. The etheric body in relation to all things. Etheric body in relation to all other etheric bodies. And that is Jupiter. Jupiter particularly in Gemini. I just love to follow out these connections. That's my problem. The communication between soul and personality, I think soul-infused mind, communication, I'm going to put this here, between soul and personality. Soul and personality. Again, this is Mercury and Venus. The Mercury-Venus mind is very important here, and the sense of the categorizing of things into the pairs of opposites is something Gemini does so much. Gosh, I forgot that diamond soul, didn't I, in relation to the second house, the jewel of greatest value. Forgive me if I go back up here, but I just want to do that. Intense light. Jewel of greatest value. The jewel in the lotus, Vulcan, definitely Vulcan. See, all of this is additive, and as you ponder on it, more things come to you. Feel a little guilty here. I know I should, in a way, develop all these things, but if someone else is interested in doing this, it would be a good exercise for them. It's the kind of exercise we've used in classes as we have taught them. Aha, yeah. Brothers and sisters, right. So the loving relationship between soul brothers and soul sisters, this is a Venusian thing. Loving sibling relationships, and this is Venus. Of course, it can simply be brothers and sisters, naturally, and that would have to do as much with Mercury as anything else. But the idea of unions on the... and I think I should include telepathy as well, shouldn't I? This is a house much connected with telepathy. Lots coming out in Gemini here. Telepathy is Mercury, and soul telepathy is Venus. And in general, the intuition, which I may have put here, pure reason, Mercury-Jupiter, and intuition, Mercury-Jupiter here again. Well, perhaps the method is what is important. I'm leaving 9 areas undone, but I have set them up so that it is possible to work through them. It would be quite a meditative exercise to do this, but at least we would see what the planets and the rays are contributing. And you know, in another sense, there's another thing we could add to this. One more thing, since we have house 1, therefore ray 1. Okay, so we go in the same way here. Since we have house 2, then ray 2 on the wisdom side. And since we have house 3, okay, here we go. Since we have house 3, then ray 3. Now, when we get beyond 7, we'd have to look at 8 in connection with the Christ, and we'd have to look at 9 in relation to ray 3 and the completion process, and 10 again in relation to ray 1, 11 a master number, but still related to ray 2. And also to Gemini, as the 11 is very much like the Pillars of Hercules visually. And with the 1 and 2 together, they combine to make 3. So that tells us that Pisces will be relating to matter and to form, and to materialization, and also to the dissolution of that which was materialized. All right, well, I'm going to try to curb my expansive Gemini tendencies. There is the desire to structure all this, and perhaps I can do it a little bit at a time, and then make note of where this is done, and that at some point they can all be put back together. But we will have to ponder on the state of the mind as all of these different planets contribute to it. Because, you know, the mind can create synthesis as well as division. And the lower mercurial mind is full of illusions. So from another point of view, we can call this the house of mental illusion. And the third ray veiling aspect of Mercury will come through. Well, I just have to say enough. And you can do those other 9 at some point, or I will, you can do them, and maybe I will also pick them up. To do this anywhere near completely would be a long, long task, and I do, on my much lower level, somehow empathize with what the Tibetan said. Out of all of the many, many triangles that I might discuss, my problem is to choose those ones which are most relevant, which have most to do with the development of the individual and humanity as a whole, because there is no time and maybe no value in trying to discuss them all. And I have the tendency, we make a joke, you know, the second ray is the ray of meticulous entirety, and those of us who know something about that call it the ray of ridiculous entirety, just too entire. So sometimes more on the first ray line, instead of going into all the details, we have to give the principle and put people back on themselves. So I'm trying to overcome a ray 2 glamour here of wanting to do too much for everybody, and that sometimes could rob them of the ability to do these things for themselves. You know, I've seen those pictures where, you know, talk about sink or swim, they throw the little baby into the swimming pool, and by goodness, the baby swims. Of course, they would rescue any baby that didn't, but the baby swims, and that's so often the case. They somehow know how to do that. And I'm trusting that we too, all of us, when given the method, would know how to do this as well, would know how to do this as well. All right, well, what this means is about halfway through this particular program, 131, well, more than halfway. Oh, look what I'm going to do. I'm just going to do something terrible. Realizing that there's not much time left in this particular program, I'm going to go on and do house four. I guess the fourth ray, by the fourth ray, I've been arguing with myself. So let's do it this way. Uh-huh. And I'll take this back. I thought I'd be able to make this behave in the right way, but I'll need somebody who really knows this word program so I don't have to do things quite so manually. We're in the fourth house, and we have the physical body, moon. The form, moon. The personality, moon. The home, moon. And I'm noticing here, let's see, the heredity. It's a big one. Moon as well. Because we do retain those tendencies from the past. The moon is memory in many ways and is related to the permanent atoms wherein all the tendencies of the past and the memories are retained. So I want to put down something here like memory. And that is moon. And also Ray 3, which is the Lord of Memory. Cancer, the fourth house, these things have made an impression and they last. Habit patterns, all right, let's make this right. Habit patterns, of course, that can be found in several places, but that's the moon again. And in general, the past, that's the moon. Let's take a look here so I can trigger my thoughts. All right, here it is. Parents, yes, okay. Parents, moon, mother, mostly, but father, possibly. Right. Okay. We also have the connection with the astral plane. Astral plane, which would be both Neptune and the moon. And we have, in general, the solar plexus, and that is Neptune, but not to exclude the moon. We have the, not just the home, but we have the ashram as a place of refuge. This is one of the higher meanings, and here the exalted Jupiter can come in, Jupiter with the moon. Let's see what else we have here. Dense physical body, Kundalini, the house of the midnight sun, initiation, yes. Initiation, both at the 10th and the 4th house, and we have Neptune, and we have Christ as the initiator at the first two initiations. And interestingly here, initiation, the 4th, in the 4th house, under Uranus, who is the Hierophant. So that is possible as well. We have all manner of foundations. We have Ray 3 and Ray 7, houses, lands, and mines. You know, we might even include here the Earth, include Earth, as its symbol is fourfold, same as the center at the base of the base of spine, center, right. So the lands could be here. Lands are the earth. And the base of spine is related to the etheric body. So the dense physical body is there, yes, definitely. The dense physical body on the moon. But let's say there is a relation to the etheric body via the base of spine center, which is connected with the earth and is fourfold. So this also has to do with, well, it's just the house of incarnation, isn't it? So incarnation, whether in a single incarnation or the incarnation of humanity, and that is the moon again, but Jupiter for opportunity to redeem the lower lives. And it's a house of sacrifice in form. And that reminds one of Neptune, the planet of sacrifice and benevolence from on high, which is Jupiter and Neptune. In other words, the monad is grounded here. The grounding of the monad, and that's moon, Jupiter and Neptune, both of which rule the monad. All right. It's the house of dense materiality, the dense form. So dense materiality of the outer form. We have both ray 3 and ray 7. And let's just say the biological rituals or the rhythms of the physical body, ray 7, and also ray 3 cycles, and the moon. Well, many things are here in the sense of the house of synthesizing all aspects into the physical form. Okay, synthesizing all aspects into the physical form. And this is Jupiter, exalted Jupiter. Midnight sun, initiation, the parent, aha, right. So the, I'll put it here, the guru, as parent, compassionate parent. It's like mother. And that is the Neptune and, well, the moon for the mother parent, and also Jupiter for compassion, for benevolence. And Neptune for compassion. So this is, as they say, there's no place like home, but there's also the prison, and that is the moon. Prison in dense form, and that is the moon. Well, I've given lots of hints here, and my mind tends to be the type that is exhaustive, and maybe, you know, somehow inducing exhaustion in others. Okay, these different factors, the solar plexus, Neptune, yes, and the centers in the breasts, this is perhaps Neptune and also the moon. The vehicles of the personality, that's the moon. You get the idea. So if we were to begin from the opposite side, and we were to say, okay, what do these planets stand for? And these are the planets that are involved in this particular house. What kinds of things might appear in the house if we were simply thinking about the associated planets, the associated rays? Would we be able to come up with the same list as tradition gives to us? And of course, I guess I have to include different things come to me like this. Early home environment. And that is, of course, the moon. The moon is very, very powerful. The moon is really representing factors that have to do with our Earth. The moon is really a part of our Earth scheme, or it has been a part of our Earth scheme. It should not be considered really different from Earth. It is an aspect of the Earth. The whole dynamic here of the relation of the etheric body to the dense physical body is being worked out in the relationship between the Earth and the moon. Earth representing the etheric body and the moon representing the dense physical body. So this is also conflict between the etheric body and the dense physical body, between instinct and that which attempts to direct instinct. So this is Ray 7 versus Ray 3. And in the fourth house, the conflict naturally occurs. We have to remember that Uranus was involved here. See, Uranus has to be considered in relation to this house because it is the saving grace of this house. There is density in this house. So density relates to Moon, Earth, and Saturn. Okay, how about that? But also the pull towards ethereality and a higher, quote, home, and that is Uranus and Ray 7. So there's all kinds of associations here that might come to us if we ponder. Flashing forth of light can come as we ponder using the Mercurian method. Wherever Mercury is found and there's a flashing between two poles, there is some sort of illumination. So eventually there's going to be the rising up of matter. It involves Virgo in the sixth house, but Neptune is involved, and Uranus is involved, and Ray 7 is involved. The main thing is, when you deal with any client, there are 10 million, you know, that's just a symbolic number of possibilities, what's going on in the life of that client. Where have they been? What kind of lives have they led? In what nations, under what rays? In what root races and sub-races and branch races, what is the collected heredity of such a being? And by the way, that makes me want to say the collected heredity over many incarnations, and I look at that as Jupiter, the summation, synthetic summation. So who is this individual? And then, out of all the many things that you might say, there are some salient things which can be said. Things that really point to what is necessary, what is the need. And I come back to the idea that DK talked about the need to detect the need. One of the highest psychic powers is to be sensitive to what is the real need and what is the next step ahead, something that will not simply give a lot of information to the person, but say, look, this particularly is what needs to be done, and you must work on this thing. You know, Master Moria has said that the smallest grain of sand can stop the greatest wheel. So sometimes what has to happen is the removal of that grain of sand. It's a very specific and concrete act. And, you know, and you could spend time doing all manner of other things, and the one thing that really had to be done would go ignored, and progress would not exist. So the responsibility of the astrologer is very strong in this regard. Well, you know, you've seen my struggles, right? I have struggles with letting go. It's a Cancerian thing, you know. The mind wants to latch on to the ramifications that are here and bring out the light, but it is the glamour of doing too much. Excess. It's the Jupiterian thing as well. So, for the moment, until I possibly renege on my intention, I'm going to let it go with these first four. And then maybe I'm realizing that in two more programs, I could do all the rest as well. But in a way, I have gotten you started, have I not? If you get this far in listening to what's going on in the book, then you will be able to compare this other chart here with the houses and their higher meanings, admittedly in no wonderful order and certainly not in the same color. And then you can look at the ways in which these planets are associated with those factors which are related to the houses, both lower and higher. And if you ever forget where you are, always begin again with the very concrete factor within the house, and then just use the law of analogy to spiral it upward to a possibly higher meaning. Like, you know, if we have children for the fifth house, then we might have children of the mind or creations for the higher form of the fifth house. I think today is a day with the moon in Pisces. Am I correct about that? Yes, it's right in the middle of Pisces. And so there is a, you know, tendency to want to synthesize certain things. I will let this go now, and see if I can at some point when I really am not impressed by the need to move forward, deal with some of the other connections. There are always these connections. They come from the rays which come through the constellation and from the planets which are associated with those rays. See, as I'm looking here, I'm already getting into the fifth house. This is terrible. But the great light of Vulcan, the intense light, I'm reminded in a way of the destruction of the causal body in the fifth house. If we have real destroying planets in the fifth house, we could be dealing with the destruction of the causal body, provided the person's status is sufficient. So possible, I'm going to put this in here, possible destruction of causal body if the spiritual status warrants it. Imagine that you have Sun conjunct Pluto in the fourth house. The Sun is the causal body, Pluto is destruction, and we're dealing possibly with the fourth initiation and the fourth sign. Of course, the level of the individual has to warrant such an interpretation. So there are all kinds of interpretations possible with the symbolic indicators here. But the level of the individual, what they're really working on, has to be so much in the consciousness of the individual, of the astrologer, that level inappropriate interpretations are not offered. If a person is just learning about spirituality, you don't start talking to them as if they might possibly be taking the third or fourth initiation. See, that would be non-proportional advice, disproportionate advice. It would be glamorous. It would cause illusions, misperceptions, glamours, and so forth. So DK always comes back to it, who are you dealing with? Where are they on the path? What really is their next step ahead? Now, many of us don't even know what our next step ahead is. We have some ideas, I suppose. Here we come to an astrologer who has some esoteric knowledge. Maybe they can help us sharpen our understanding of what that next step may be. All right, well, letting go is a problem, as I've demonstrated very well, I'm sure. So I will move on now, at last, to the book. See you shortly.